When it comes to hard work, there's one important rule. Pick the right tool for the right job. That's why Chevy offers a family of Silverado pickup trucks designed just for the job. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
Those were the days, my friend. We call it never end. We sing and dance forever and a day.
All right, it's Dave Player back with you here on 720 WGN. So Nostalgia Digest magazine is celebrating their fall issue, focusing on the 100th anniversary of radio, and the winter edition is right around the corner. Editor-in-chief Steve Darnall joins us on the Team Hopper phone line. What's going on, Steve?
David, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much, and I'm... I'm celebrating radio's 100th anniversary like everyone, right?
That's crazy. When you think about that and the history behind radio, that is amazing, you know, that we are that far out there with our medium and how much impact it has made on everything from news, politics, music, comedy, just the development of this medium has been incredible. That was KDKA back in Pittsburgh in 1920, right?
Yes. That was the first commercial radio station to sign on in the U.S. And as you know, you're talking about the things that radio has changed. As I recall, the first night they were on the air, they gave election returns.
Oh, yeah, so, there you go. Right.
Warren Harding won. But thankfully, radio did better. Yeah, well, and when we were looking at the fact that our magazine, which of course covers the golden age of radio, among other things, was looking at the 100th anniversary of radio, we knew we had to do something to celebrate it. And my goodness, obviously, books can be and have been written about the history of radio, and we knew we couldn't do that. But we also knew we couldn't let this go unnoticed, so we wrote an article about the golden age of radio, and in a way it was really kind of revelatory for me to get to research all that again, because you realize all the things, as you say, that radio has done to change our lives, that and all the things that radio might be doing now, that started somewhere, and in many cases it started 70 and 80 and 90 and 100 years ago.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you know, there's so many milestones, especially in those early days in the development stages, like just a couple of years later, you know, you talked about Warren Harding, the election results, you know, that was the first presidential address, the first time America actually heard their president speak. Mm-hmm. The first radio ad was that same year, I think, in New York. And then this is the funny thing. In 1930, it was the first car radio was sold by Motorola, but it looked like a regular radio that you would just plug in the wall. Did they just sit it on the car seat? And I'm not even sure how that worked. It must have been battery.
Yeah, I wonder about that, because certainly I know from talking to people who were alive in the 20s that there were radios that you would actually power by hooking them up to your car battery. That said, I cannot imagine you trying to do that while driving.
yeah, no.
Yeah, that's a fair question. I think, and my goodness, yes, the fact that here was a mass medium that could travel with you.
Yeah.
This was unheard of.
Yeah.
I mean, let alone the idea of a mass medium. But you certainly couldn't do that with movies, at least not 100 years ago.
No, and you think about 1930. I mean, that's pretty innovative for back then to be able to do that. I'm sure getting a good, clear signal was tough as you were driving through the city or doing whatnot. But to have that in your car and listen to a ball game or the news or some nice music when you were driving, that's pretty cool.
I know. It's absolutely fascinating, and you're right. In some respects, it's hard to believe it's only been 100 years, because it just seems like civilization has hurtled forward at such a remarkable rate. And as we say, all those things in radio, for instance, and in broadcasting that we kind of take for granted now, that's because someone in the 1920s or 30s or 40s was setting up the groundwork that would allow people in later years to build on it. You know, it's fascinating, and you're right. It's like studying American history in a way that American history textbooks don't do.
Right. Exactly. One of the other big things was the early 1930s was the Hooper rating system, which I remember hearing about, and maybe Chuck talked about it once on his show years ago. But I mean, that was, you know, we know Nielsen, we know Arbitron, we know all these other rating systems, but the Hooper ratings, that was how you kind of gauged advertising dollars and so forth. I mean, that was pretty early on too.
Yes, and as I recall, I mean, and again, in those days in the 1930s, what we're talking about, they would largely do it by calling people on the telephone and literally saying, what radio show are you listening to? Nowadays, of course, you know, we have devices that can plug into our radios or televisions and send the data back to whoever, any interested party. But yes, back then, they would call people and say, you know, find out what radio shows were playing in the background, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a dubious, you know, it was basically the best system they had.
Yeah,
it wasn't
right.
necessarily the most trustworthy. On the other hand, clearly a lot of people carved out very long and deservingly long careers on radio because of those ratings. People like Jack Benny and Fred Allen and Bing Crosby and Bob Hope, you know. Those ratings are one of the reasons that they were on the air for two or three decades each, you know?
Well, I was going to say, we're talking a lot about the technical advances of radio, but, you know, you focus in Nostalgia Digest, and those were the days, on the big stars of the day. And, you know, Jack Benny, you were talking about, he started in the early 1930s. I mean, this guy was on the air between radio and television, what, 1930s? Really, even with TV specials, through the early 1970s. I mean, he was probably most recognized, maybe besides Bob Hope or George Burns, but the most recognized and respected comedian, radio, TV, movie stars of the century.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, you can certainly argue that there were bigger stars, and Bob Hope, you know, they don't get much bigger than that. But in terms of the longevity of his career, but also the fact that he always managed to be funny, and he was also highly respected by other comedians, you know, that Jack Benny's kind of the gold standard of radio comedy. And even today, you're right, we can look back and you can listen to Jack Benny programs from 60 and 70 years ago, and you'd be hard-pressed to find a true dud.
Yeah,
And in fact, you know, talking about commercials and whatnot, and I always remember Jack Benny was really the first person on radio who had the idea that humor could be introduced into commercials, or more to the point, that you could make commercials as entertaining as the rest of a show. And I remember 1932, Jack's first show for Canada Dry, and he actually told the story about a girlfriend he knew whose uncle had apparently been to every night spot in New York, so now he was going north to drink Canada Dry.
Ah, hello. Hello, 1-2.
I know, yes, you're doing your waka waka.
Yeah.
But the fact is, yes, he got a lot better at that over time. But, you know, the fact is that's one of those things we talk about. Now, you cannot imagine commercials on radio or television without some humor base to them. I mean, obviously, yes, political ads and whatnot, not so much. But, you know, comedy in commercials is kind of second nature now, and Stan Freberg, of course, made a huge career of it in the 50s and 60s and 70s, but it all started with Jack Benny, and that all started, goodness, almost 90 years ago.
Well, and those radio shows, and even in early television, it wasn't even so much the shows weren't necessarily known as for the stars of the show. It was known for the sponsor, right? I mean, that's, you know, you said, you know, Canada Dry presents. It was
right.
All these shows, the Philco, Playhouse, all this other stuff. It was all based on the brand and trying to sell radios and selling product. No, by the way, Ebb and Costello are going to be your host tonight. Like, it was almost secondary in nature, right?
That's true. Yes, I mean, yes, there was the Jell-O program starring Jack Benny, or Maxwell House Coffee Time with Burns and Allen. You're right. Of course, back then, too, you know, the advertising agencies were the ones who produced the shows. You know, nowadays, of course, you look at television and you've got, you know, production companies, you know, and the networks will come in with ideas of their own. But back then, you know, the advertising agencies put sponsor and show together and then brought that to networks and said, you know, here's what we want to do. And, you know, the networks really, apart from, you know, hosting these stars and sponsors, you know, they weren't necessarily involved in bringing talent to the air. That changed over time as well. And, right. and William Paley of CBS made a point of creating a division at his network that would create new shows with new stars. And that's how we got shows like Gunsmoke and Our Miss Brooks. And, yeah. of course, those were hugely successful on both radio and television.
The fall issue's out. Winter one's right around the corner. What else is in the fall edition, Steve?
Well, in the autumn issue of the Digest, we've got the article, the cover story, of course, about the 100th anniversary of radio. And I want to give props to my friend Mark Braun, who knew that we wanted to do a special cover for the 100th anniversary, and he drew an absolutely beautiful one with about 30 great stars from the golden age of radio. And I invite everyone who sees the cover to identify them, but once you get a copy, you'll be able to do that too. There are also articles about the golden age of radio horror and mystery, shows like Inner Sanctum and Lights Out. There's an article about the career of Alan Ladd. Another one about the Adventures of Superman radio show. And then, you know, the schedule for our radio show and articles about actor Raymond Massey and a very obscure movie comedy team called Clark and McCullough.
Oh.
And, yeah, so there you go. See that? And that's the thing we've always striven for, Dave, as you know, is I've always gone on the impression that nostalgia can be a very broad umbrella.
It can, but also very educational. Like I love that's what I learned. I walk away from reading the magazine learning a lot about this time in entertainment, and I think that's what makes each of these articles so special. And then you got the winter edition coming up. What's a little preview on that one?
Sure, absolutely. Well, we've got a cover story about the late and wonderful Olivia de Havilland, along with an article about the screen partnership of Nelson Eddy and Jeanette MacDonald, articles about The Shadow and Danny Thomas, and a lovely, with the holidays coming up, there's actually a very nice article that we were proud to publish about some very famous toys that have been staples during the holiday season for many years, and really how they came to be, their origin stories, if you will.
Very, very cool. And again, you want a subscription to Nostalgia Digest? Give us that rundown again.
Absolutely, sure. You can subscribe through our website at nostalgiadigest.com, or you can call our offices at 773-769-6575. We would love to hear from you. Just as we're enjoying this conversation with you, David.
Love it. Love it. That's awesome. Thanks, buddy. And always look forward to getting the magazine. I can't wait to get to the winter one. And you and your wife have a lovely Thanksgiving.
And the same to you, Dave. Thank you so much. And thanks for your hospitality.
Thanks, buddy. All right. News is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on 720 WGN.